This is Hemant.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. Please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast if you like what you're listening to. If you give $5 a month, you get ad-free episodes, and we appreciate it. And Jessica is back, and it's not just me again.
Spooky Halloween, everybody.
I want my $5 back.
Hemant has the privilege to sit in my house as it's almost all the way decorated for Halloween because yes. I'm having a party this weekend that Hemant is coming to remind me again. Remind me again?
Yes.
You're a fucking liar.
I am not coming because I have kids and they have issues.
Ugh, worst.
I know.
But yeah, I'm back. Hey, it was thank you to everybody who came out in Portland to our meetup. It was such a fun night. We had a really, really nice time, got to get to know a bunch of great people, and I really appreciate it. Also, Hemant, almost everybody was like 15 minutes early.
Whoa.
Like, everybody had the exact same idea, like, okay, I'm going to go there like half hour early and grab some food and before the meetup started. And so I sat, and so I did that with my friends Lee and Amanda, and like immediately five people were like, are you Jessica? And I was like, I guess I am eating with my new friend.
Nicely done.
But yeah, it was great. Good times.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm debating. I thought I would start with a happy story because we never have them.
Oh.
And I have like two-ish. I know. I know. It's very weird. So in Delaware County, Pennsylvania, there's a school district where there's a Penncrest High School. And if you look in their student handbook, they have their dress code.
Uh-huh.
And if you look in the dress code, it says students shouldn't dress or in any manner that advocates illegal or antisocial behavior, blah, blah, blah. I mean, nothing there is out of the ordinary. But then they list specifics that you can't wear.
Okay.
And it includes, you know, anything that advocates violence, that's sexually suggestive, double entendres, like we know what you're doing. Anything that's disrespectful, so far so good. And then the last thing on the list is you can't wear anything that is satanic in nature.
Yeah, that's pretty specific for use at a public school.
Yeah. Huh. And so, like, what is that
even?
It
feels like it was left over from the 80s and somebody forgot to cross it out.
That is exactly what I was thinking. Like, what do they mean by satanic? Are we panicking again? Like, what is the issue here? And, I mean, if they're saying you can't wear anything evil. Well, like, kind of be more specific about that. Like, what are you saying?
There are arguments to be made that the Catholic Church is evil.
That's
so.
Right. And so recently, I guess earlier this month in October, a guy named Joseph Rose, who is the founder of a local group called Satanic Delco, Delaware County, which is not affiliated with any of the national satanic groups. It's an independent group.
Mm-hmm.
But they are Satanists in the same vein as the other satanic groups, in that we don't believe Satan is real. We are ethical Satanists, that sort of metaphorical thing. He reached out to the school district and is like, what's up with this? You can't do that.
Yeah.
He said, you know, their website says we're Satanists. We believe in compassion and empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And after several weeks of sending the school district message after message, it finally worked. And so, first of all, here's what he said. The idea that a public school would allow religious expression in school, but choose to single out and prohibit the expression of one specific religion obviously seemed like a problem for us.
Uh-huh.
And after a month of emails, the superintendent this week sent out a message that said, although we've had no complaints or concerns brought forward by any student, parent, or resident, we will remove this language from our current dress code information
so
in
brave.
The student handbook.
The true heroes of our time.
I know. They did upload a new handbook. It does not have that final bullet point in it. So,
good.
Yay. What I was very amused by is that a local like ABC News affiliate did a story on this, and they found a couple... I'm guessing they found Facebook commenters, and they're like, let's reach out to these crazy people. And they found, here's one woman, her name is Lisa. I wouldn't want a satanic or cultish anything on clothing in schools. Which, way to miss that story
real
entirely.
Real brave and neat. Like, who are you standing up against?
And wait, haven't gotten to Donna. Here's what Donna says. It's like a free speech issue. Are they going to allow Nazis to be able to put symbols on kids' shirts and send them to school? Said Donna.
Okay, Donna, let's all take it easy about the Nazi symbolism, Donna. Really, we can't call people Nazis anymore in the year of our Lord 2021 because Lord knows we don't know if we're kidding or not about it.
Kids, you can wear satanic gear, I guess. Don't make it mean, but hey, if you have Satan on your shirt,
yeah.
do it for Donna, yeah. is what I'm saying.
Donna will really, really enjoy your... I think it will just be like a thoughtful contribution to the discourse about, you know, religious freedom. Right. And I think Donna has a lot of interesting points. Maybe we should just listen for a second.
Liberty University is in the news. It was in the news while you were gone over and over and over.
Uh-huh.
For different reasons entirely. And I was debating as I'm staring at my sheet here, which version of the Liberty story should I do first?
All I know is that, is there more sexual assault stuff that's come out?
Kind of.
Okay.
Here's the first one that's not sexual assault related. Great. Since we're talking
about
Liberty.
What a fun break
Liberty.
For me.
I know. Liberty University, remember a while back, this is 2019, Jerry Falwell Jr., who was the then president of mm-hmm. Liberty University, he said, I want to start a think tank. And everyone's
yes.
like, when have you ever had thoughts over there? And
then he's like, enough to warrant a tank.
Right. And then he's like, don't worry, I'll make it better. I'm going to bring Charlie Kirk, the conservative activist, along, and we'll call it the Falkirk Center.
He should have called it a think bowl. Like, get a little goldfish, put it in a bowl. You don't need a full tank for your thoughts, my dude. Go ahead.
A shot glass tank thing. Yeah, a think shot glass.
Yes.
So the Falkirk Center launched, and obviously everyone's looking at this like, what are you people up to?
And how are you scamming money from people?
Yeah, and like, here's the thing. Normal think tanks out there.
Yeah.
They have money behind them. Mm-hmm. They produce policy papers, research papers. They give lectures, basically trying to advocate for a particular point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't have to like what they say, but like, that's not
weird.
They have
the right to exist.
They have the right to exist. They can do their thing. So the question is, okay, well, what are you all advocating for? What academic scholarly things are you all doing at this think tank,
mm-hmm.
if you're calling it a think tank? Because all we are seeing is that you get, like, the Fox News rejects, uh-huh. your Jenna Ellis's, your Eric Metaxas.
Right, right.
And then you put them on your fellows list, and then you tweet out, like, right-wing memes. It's like, that's pretty much all you do, so why are you here? And
like,
so,
they're doing the job of a 14-year-old kid in their mom's basement. Like,
yes.
you don't need a think tank to grind out memes,
which is
Chad.
The only talent Charlie Kirk has.
Uh-huh.
And so it turns out this week, there's a former Liberty administrator, Scott Lamb, who's at the center of, like, all the stories this week. He got fired, I think, at the beginning of the month, and he has since filed a lawsuit against Liberty, which we'll get into that in a bit. He revealed to Politico this week, I have a secret recording of a phone call with the new president of Liberty University, whose name is Jerry Prevo.
Uh-huh.
It's another Jerry. But he's like, no, I have a phone call with that guy where he basically admits that this think tank is basically just a way to provide cover so that they can get Republicans elected. There's no issue they care about. They only want to get conservatives into office, which is
you
a thing.
You say that as if it's revealing something new to me when I deeply understood that this is their mission all along.
So here's this part of the story from Politico.
Okay.
In the phone call, Jerry Prevo says to Scott Lamb, who is one of the administrators at Liberty,
mm-hmm.
are they getting people elected, which is one of our main goals? Which is like, that's a little, you're not even subtle.
A little on the nose, bud.
Yeah. Are they really motivating our conservative people to really get out to vote? If they are, we ought to be seeing some changes in elected officials. And we are to some extent. All I want to do is make us more effective.
More white.
Yeah. So this is, again, here's the thing. I know we all thought that's what they were doing anyway.
Right.
But when you actually put it out there and say, look, our entire purpose here is to get conservative Republicans elected,
mm-hmm.
you aren't doing a thing that a nonprofit university is allowed to do. You're serving as like a political action committee. That's
right.
a different thing. You got to pay taxes. Like, you don't get to do that under the guise of, we're just a nonprofit school.
That's what I was going to ask about think tanks, because I have heard it more as a conceptual idea. Is there any, like, nonprofit aspect to it, or is it just, like, a regular, like, is there any reason we should be suspicious of, like, their tax bullshit?
I wish I knew a better answer to this, but there are conservative think tanks, there are liberal think tanks.
Sure.
Even the ones that are conservative, I haven't heard of them. I mean, certain ones anyway, the big ones,
right.
They seem to be on the up and up in terms of saying we advocate for these conservative policies under these arguments.
Okay.
And you can argue that they're wrong or they're using wrong information or whatever, but not like they're scamming the system.
But in a governmental sense, a think tank is just any other bullshit company.
Sure.
It's not a nonprofit that we have to like keep an eye on or has special.
The question I don't know the answer to is, are they nonprofits necessarily?
I'll look it up.
But when you, yeah, please, when you are doing it under the guise of a nonprofit, but you are clearly playing politics, it's the same argument we have when churches and pastors get up on the pulpit, in the pulpit, and they say, you all need to vote for this candidate.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. You can't tell people how to vote. You can always say, in this church, we oppose marriage equality, which is stupid bullshit, but also you're allowed to do that.
Right.
But there's a difference between advocating for an issue, which you're always allowed to do,
mm-hmm.
even when you're a nonprofit, because that's what some of them are based on,
right.
versus telling people you have to vote for this candidate. And like, even the smarter nonprofits know about the loopholes. The loopholes say, well, we can't tell you who to vote for, but we made a scorecard of how every candidate believes on our issues. Turns out every Democrat got an F from the NRA or some bullshit that. Like, whatever, that's still legal. You're within the boundaries there. What they're doing here, they shouldn't be doing. I'll add one thing here. By the way, Jerry Prevost said, yeah, we're like, I have a 501c3 church. I know what I'm doing. And clearly, because Scott Lamb is pushing back, saying, we can't just have a think tank to get people elected.
Right.
And this guy's like, yeah, we can. I know how to do this stuff. So there's that.
So think tank, most of them operate as a 501c3.
So nonprofits.
So they are a nonprofit, which is interesting. I guess that was
But they're not out there telling you how to vote. They're telling you, here's how we feel about taxes, guns, whatever.
Right. Which, yes.
So that's Scott Lamb saying, okay, at this school, by the way, I should say the Falkirk Center, Scott Lamb is the guy who said, we're not renewing our contract with Charlie Kirk. He said that last year.
Hey.
And then the whole place changed its name to like Standing for Liberty think tank, and they haven't done jack since then, really. But anyway, that's kind of what they were arguing about. So that's part one of Liberty doesn't really know what it's doing right
now. Oh boy, what a mess.
Here's part two in our trilogy here.
Oh god, it's a trilogy.
I know.
So we're at the Two Towers.
So there was a bill that was being debated in the U.S. House this week.
Yes.
It would reauthorize the Family Violence and Prevention Services Program, which all you need to know about it is it helps victims of domestic violence.
Helps victim. Okay.
So good. We want this thing
overall,
to pass.
Strong.
Will the Senate pass it? Who knows? That's a separate issue. But the House is debating this. And Republicans, as usual, are against it because,
because it's helping
violence.
Somebody.
Yes. Because it's helping
like,
someone
we
through
cannot.
The government. I mean, realistically,
we,
it's, we don't want the government helping
anybody.
I don't know, anybody. So anyway, one of the people who spoke out against the bill is a Republican named Bob Good, who's from Virginia. He's a congressman from Virginia. Yes,
I bet Bob Good is, in fact, bad.
Thank you for making the most obvious joke. I appreciate it because I was thinking it as well.
Welcome.
You're welcome. Yes. So here's...
Guys, that was just off the top of my head. I don't even write this stuff in advance.
So Bob Good, why is he arguing against this bill?
Because he's
might wonder.
Stupid and bad, I bet.
Why? So he says domestic violence and all these other societal problems and stuff.
Wait.
Yep.
Can I just take
Please?
A swing at
take,
his statement?
You get one guess.
Okay. What was it? Domestic violence are not problems in our laws. It's a problem in our Bibles. Ever since we banished Jesus from the schools and the churches, probably, that's why there's domestic violence.
Close.
There was famously never domestic violence in the Bible.
You've hit the dartboard.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you're on there.
I'll take
Here's what he said. Quote, nearly everything that plagues our society can be attributed to a failure to follow God's laws for morality.
Bing bong.
And his rules for and definition of marriage and family.
Sorry.
So because we let gay people get married, that's why you have domestic violence. You think this bill will help victims? So why is this part of our trilogy, you might be asking?
I'm always asking.
Bob Good, his former job before he became a congressman, was fundraiser for Liberty University's athletic program.
Oh, God. Is there a more pointless job? Give me more money so we can football real good.
Yeah, football.
Hey, guess what? In my late 30s, I'm turning onto an anti-sports lady. More on that later.
Yes, more on that later. Here's part three of our trilogy.
Yes,
this is also from Scott Lamb.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I take that back. Not Scott Lamb now. But remember, remember about a month or two ago, we talked about 12 or 13 women had filed a lawsuit against Liberty saying, we were sexually assaulted. We reported it. Mm-hmm. Liberty did not take us seriously, or we were afraid to go to them because we knew they weren't going to take us seriously. And all of that violates the federal Title IX guidelines that basically should have protected us. There is... If you are a school that gets federal funding in any way, you have to follow certain guidelines. Liberty isn't doing that.
Right.
So what we got this week, ProPublica's Hannah Dreyfus spoke with several victims, one of whom I would argue is one of the anonymous women in the lawsuit because their stories match up perfectly.
Oh, uh-huh.
Though she did not say that in her piece, which I found weird.
Okay.
But also other women who may or may not be part of the lawsuit. So these are additional women. And basically the argument is... because of Liberty's rules, the Liberty Way, their school policy guidebook that says, you know, no sex, no drinking, nothing like that when you're not married. Because of that, if a woman said, you know, I went to a party and a guy assaulted me, their basic stance is, well, what were you wearing? Mm-hmm. That's their entire policy. That's the impression you get.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go through all the details this time.
Okay.
But one of the things that came up is... according to one of the victims who spoke with the reporter here, she said that as her case was moving through the system, Liberty said she needed to sign a document acknowledging that she could be found to have violated the university's code of conduct.
Cool.
Like, hey, we know you drank at this party. Mm-hmm. You need to acknowledge that if you want us to, like, take your case seriously.
And it's just one of those things where they are doing this under the guise. And it reflects the, like... patriarchal Christian system, because it's a sin is a sin. And so a man raping you is a sin, but so too is you drinking alcohol.
Yeah,
so
and you both wearing sinned. A thing and you making out.
Yeah,
with him.
So
all
I
of
guess
this,
it all comes out in the wash.
Yeah. And
you did one sin, you got one sinned at you. Sorry.
There were some people defending Liberty saying, look, they just want to make sure she's aware of what she did for the problem. They weren't dismissing her assault.
Fucking jump up your own ass with that bullshit.
I'm right there with you. This is from the ProPublica article.
Yeah.
10 more former students told me they chose not to report their rapes to campus officials amid fear of being punished. I knew I would face the blame for putting myself in that situation, said another alum who said she was assaulted by a Liberty student. Here's another part of this. Liberty's lead investigator in their equity office, the person whose job it is to follow Title IX guidelines, Alisa Bucci, she now works as a Title IX investigator at Baylor, another private Christian school.
Huh.
So, like, she's here because she clearly didn't do anything at Liberty to help these women, and magically she just got a job at another school doing the same thing. Because they always fail upwards.
Yeah. Oh, here's... it sounds similar to the Catholic Church, and I can't put my finger on why, but something about it.
Scott Lamb, he did show up in this story. That's I mentioned him.
We missed him. Sir Lamb trilogy.
The reporter for ProPublica, after speaking to all these women and getting this piece ready for publication, does the thing all good journalists do, and she sends Liberty a series of questions. Like, we want to know how you reacted to this. Is this a fair assessment of what you did?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we never got a response from Liberty when it came to those questions, the detailed questions we sent them. But Scott Lamb said to the reporter, now that he's fired and not working for them anymore.
Did he find his spine?
He said in an interview with the reporter, The emails from ProPublica were definitely ignored, said Lamb. He recalled himself and one colleague trying to make a case for the school to respond. We said, listen, the optics of this are killing us. Is there anything we can message? Something? A message about empathy? Or that we're at least working to get to the bottom of this? And then it dawned on us, they're not working to get to the bottom of this.
What?
Listen, the number of people who worked at Liberty who had it's remember we talked about the athletes who go to Liberty on scholarship because they want a Division One they want to play for a Division One team.
Division One.
Then they have no idea what they're stepping into. All they know is I got a scholarship.
Yeah.
And like you can't be mad at them for accepting a full ride if for basketball or football or something. Mm-hmm. But then afterwards they realize, oh, this is a crazy school.
Oh no, I've entered a cult accidentally.
And like, I kind of feel sympathy for the college students because whatever, I don't expect you to know everything about the school. Scott Lamb, an administrator at Liberty, for him to be like, I don't think they care about the women at this school. Like,
oh
dude,
my God.
Where were
you? I think this pool is wet. Can you believe it?
He added in the interview with the reporter, concerns about sexual assault would go up the chain and then die. He said it was, quote, a conspiracy of silence.
Yeah, welcome to the 1920s. We are past this. We know this is going on. Just, okay. I feel like once a year or so, I have to listen to a known man, I was going to say famous man, a known man discover rape or discover the patriarchy or discover glass ceilings. Like,
or some Republican who says, well, I have a daughter and I now know
as
hurting
a father
women.
Of daughters. Like, honestly,
I now know
like,
hurting women is
it
bad.
It is the Republicans in 2002 having a gay nephew. All
it's Obama
over
coming
again.
Coming to terms with marriage equality. Like, well, my kids have a friend with lesbian parents, and now I support marriage equality.
Oh my God, so
like,
brave.
Come on, man.
Jesus. But like, it's all like, okay, yeah, fine, good. He got to the end of the book, but we have been screaming it at him for literally his entire life. So like, maybe miss me with, can you believe this? It's almost like nobody cares about women. I know that's not it, but there must be something going on. Jesus
good
Christ,
times.
These fucking people. Oh. Every week with these people, they come in with something new.
I do enjoy that Scott Lamb is suing them. And like, yeah, I'm rolling my eyes at everything he's saying. Like, how do you not know, dude? Do you know who you work for? You voluntarily work for Jerry Falwell and you like suddenly figured out he was a bad guy?
This guy thinks
I knew who his father was when I was a fetus.
I mean,
and I wasn't paying attention.
No, what he is trying to frame himself as is Finn from the new Star Wars movies of like, yeah, I was a stormtrooper, but I have a heart of gold and I'm going to get out. But what he really is just like one of those sandworms. He's of no purpose. He's a blob of nothing. And I don't think about him ever.
Ouch.
Yeah. I don't. Right. Are there sandworms in Star Wars?
No, I think you're thinking of Dune. I don't know.
Dune or Beetlejuice.
If I'm out movieing you, something is wrong. Okay, so interesting article. We're done with Liberty for now.
Mm.
Okay, moving on to something that is not Liberty related. When Donald Trump was in office, you know, there was this trend that was going on for several years of people shifting away from organized religion.
Yeah.
And that was continuing even with Trump. And I would argue because of Trump, it's probably going to go faster. But
caught
we won't,
some momentum there.
We won't really see the effects of that for a few years still.
I still think it's a pretty good hypothesis.
So here's a thing that was very interesting. Recently, the Pew Research Center came out with an analysis of some of their data. And one thing they found is that, yeah, overall, people are moving away from organized religion. We've known that for a while. There are more nuns than ever before, N-O-N-E-S. But one specific religious denomination has not gone down with the trend.
Can I guess?
Which?
Ooh, okay.
It's not really a trick question.
Oh, no. I don't. Can I guess? I'm going to guess Islam.
I think in the U.S., they were the same trends as always.
As always?
Little less. But
okay,
like,
who bucked the trend?
White evangelicals,
well,
of course, right? Like,
okay, I was going to guess that. I was like, Jessica, that's too obvious. You can't always blame white evangelicals.
I know. Pew said they went from about 25% of the population in 2016 to about 29% in 2020.
That makes me feel bad in my heart.
And so here's the question. Why would it have gone up? What is it that is drawing people to embrace the evangelical label?
Because they're breeding like crazy because they do not believe in birth control. And so they're just popping out babies at an irresponsible rate. Sorry, no, that's what they say about immigrants. I don't know what it is.
So that would have happened. I mean, if that was the case, that would have been something that happened a long time ago because everyone they're talking to are adults.
Oh.
So it's not just the baby thing.
Okay, tell me.
So here's my concern. My first thought was, there are two options. One is maybe Trump has something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But why would anyone become an evangelical for real because of Trump? That seems weird because Trump wasn't. I mean, he's a hypocrite. He did lip service to Christians. But why would anyone like a Trump spoke and then I found Jesus? Right. That doesn't make sense.
Okay, before we go any further, do we have answers or are we just both?
Yes.
We have answers. Okay, then I would like to guess.
Yes.
Then if there is an answer.
I mean, the other flip side of that is there something about a religious conservatism that is anti-gay, anti-trans, anti-woman, anti-science, mm-hmm. anti-vax, that actually draws in a lot of disaffected people who are like, well, they seem very confident and proud about all these things they hate. And I like, it's like why people are drawn to Joe Rogan.
Well,
it's like he sounds like he knows what he's talking about, and I don't care if he's right.
So loud, so he must be right.
So it's like, well, what's the reason people are shifting over? Because it's not like there's been a revival, and if there's been some religious revival, it's not affecting any other brand of Christianity. So you can guess. But Ryan Burge of Eastern Illinois University, who we've talked about many times, who does a lot of data analysis, he has a theory for this.
So my guess would be that it has to do with people being drawn to clans and tend to follow leaders. And I feel like the sort of Trumpism of it all awoke a lot of people. And the Venn diagram of there are so many Trump supporters that were also evangelical Christians, it stands to reason that those people who were never into religion, never into politics, all of a sudden were obsessed with Trump. They start going to these rallies. It mixes all the same people. Hey, here's a church. They all believe the same thing as me.
You're closer on the dartboard than you were before.
Yes.
Yes. Here's what Burge says. And again, this isn't an answer. This is a theory based on the evidence he has.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what he's saying. Many Americans who have begun to embrace the evangelical identity are people. Here's what he noticed. They don't attend church.
This is
the thing that he saw that said there's something else going on here than religion. He said most of the people who are shifting to evangelicalism, according to Pew, are people who hardly ever attend religious services. For instance, in 2008, only 16% of self-identified evangelicals said, I go to church never or seldom. Uh-huh. Only 16%. But in 2020, that number jumped to 27%.
Wow.
So, and in 2008, a third of evangelicals who did not attend church said they were conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's about 50%.
Wow.
So there is this mix. He's real. This is what Burge is saying. And he writes this in a New York Times guest essay that got a lot of traction this week. He's basically saying they're not embracing the religious aspect of evangelicalism. And here's the thing. If you are evangelical, there are, I mean, we can all debate, like, what does a true Christian believe? Because when it comes to evangelical Christianity, what is it that they all have in common? It, like, you can say, well, they're
racism?
All anti, is it racism? Are they all anti-gay? And they're not.
And yes.
there are pockets of self-described evangelicals who would say, there's no contradiction between my faith and I'm progressive Christian. And, like, I do want to share the gospel, but I do genuinely support gay people and same-sex rights and all that stuff. So it's like, well, that's not the thing. The hate is not the thing that binds you all together. So, like, what is it? And it turns out, like, if you ask people who are in the know about this stuff, there are a few things that bind these people together. They have to be born again. Mm-hmm. They have to accept that Jesus died for their sins. Mm-hmm. They have to believe in like a literal interpretation of the Bible. They have to be spread the gospel. They want to spread the gospel. Those are the things like every evangelical would say, yeah, those four are like everyone has to agree to that. After that, we'll argue even if there's 90% agreement.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Here's what Burge is saying now. He's saying, well, what do all these people have in common? Because they're not going to church. They're not falling in lockstep with this. And what he basically boils it down to is that the thing drawing them in, like you said, is Trump. And he adds that there are actually Catholics who would describe themselves as white Catholics who would say, I'm evangelical, and Mormons who would call themselves evangelical. Yeah. And he's like, but you're not, but you're saying you are.
Yeah, but evangelical just sounds like a modifier. I'm an evangelical Christian. I'm an evangelical Mormon.
And so here's what Burge says. What it means to be evangelical is being radically remade. It used to be that when many people thought about evangelicalism, they conjured up an image of a fiery preacher imploring them to accept Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the data indicate that more and more Americans are conflating evangelicalism with republicanism and melding two forces to create a movement that's not entirely about politics or religion, but power. If I were to interpret this, he's basically saying a lot of people said, well, I love the MAGA rallies, I support Donald Trump, and I want to broadcast myself all of that. And like, yeah, you could wear a red hat and that's one way of showing your allegiance. But another way is just telling people, yeah, I'm evangelical. Maybe not because you're not Christian, but like that's the identifier you're using.
We love labels. People love to be labeled. It makes life easier and it makes our brains work better.
And I was trying to think about this, like, okay, let's say that's true. Let's say a lot of these evangelicals, especially the more recent embracers of the label, if Burge's theory here is true, think about what that means. It means a lot more church services would look like political rallies, which is absolutely happening.
Oh, it's totally happening, and hopefully that turns a lot of people off of church.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and not just at like Greg Locke's circus tent in Tennessee, but like a lot of other places. They preach about politics more than they preach about the gospel or Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
It would suggest Donald Trump, for all the things people have said about how he's totally taken over the Republican Party, no, he also co-opted like an entire religion for himself.
Oh my God, and like a fucking third of the country.
And think about that. If Trump says one thing and Jesus said another, where are these people going? They're totally following Trump. It's scary.
It's truly wild.
It means Christian nationalism really is one of the greatest threats we face in America.
And we've known that for years.
It means critics of conservative Christianity, we were totally right when we've said forever that white evangelicals don't actually give a damn about Jesus.
I love being right. It's among my favorite feelings.
I mean, this was true decades ago, but like it was so glaringly obvious over the Trump years. And it also means, I think, that there are a lot of pastors. I think we may have discussed this last time. Maybe not. I forgot when this came out. But there are a lot of pastors who are silent about politics from the pulpit. They think it has no place there.
Mm-hmm.
Which, okay, I understand that. There are actually very few pastors who talk about politics, very conservative politics, from the pulpit. That's a survey that came out recently, too.
Okay.
But it means that the silent ones, I'm not asking them to endorse Democrats.
No.
But they do have an obligation to speak out against the crazies and to speak out against Trumpism.
Right.
And to call out, like, the MAGA crazies in their own congregations.
Right.
Because if you're preaching the gospel and you're preaching the message of Jesus and you have Trump supporters in your crowd, you suck at your job. Your message is not getting through to them.
Right.
So you need to do a better job of pushing against the lies that your colleagues in the pulpit are doing. And also, I'm very curious what this means for the future of evangelical Christianity, because younger Christians, I mean, yeah, white evangelicals, even younger ones, do embrace Trump, but not as overwhelmingly as the old ones. So what do you do if you're a young evangelical Christian who isn't a fan of Trump?
Sure.
But like, if I met you or something, I'm totally assuming you're a fan.
Right.
I think you now have an obligation to either shed the evangelical label or really show the world why you don't support Trump. Mm-hmm. That has to be like a driving force in what you do.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah, I kind of like this image of these people getting drawn into Christianity. Because it makes me think probably 10 years ago now, Ono Ross and Carey, one of their first big deep dives was into Mormonism. And they fully did the whole thing and did all of the shit and got baptized into the Mormon church.
Mormon temple. Yeah.
Mormon temple. Yeah. Okay. I just second guessed myself for a second. And I can they were talking about people are texting me all the time. They're reaching out. And probably for somebody who has felt ignored for their whole life, somebody being interested in them for their church is really, really exciting. And then you get to everything and then you get baptized and then now you're just a member of the church and you're expected to show up every Sunday and tithe. And that probably isn't as fun as people showing them the way. So that totally makes sense of yeah, this is going to be great. And then you show them, you're like, oh, there's homework. I hate this part.
Part two of the same story. We've talked about
a lot of multi-parts in this one.
Josh Mandel, he's the former Ohio lawmaker. He's the former state treasurer in Ohio, and now he's running for Senate.
Okay. Name rings a bell, but I don't know why.
We've discussed him a few times. He's running for the Republican nomination for a U.S. Senate seat.
In Ohio?
He's one of the guys.
Is he primary in Kasich?
I think it's an open seat. Oh. Someone's retiring. But it's an open Republican seat.
Okay.
And he's running for it. There's a guy, J.D. Vance, who's running for it.
Oh, that guy.
That guy.
Oh, so, boy.
So they have their conservative picks here. And during a debate, a panel discussion or something, among the Republicans, everyone was asked, what's the greatest crisis facing our kids? And what, if anything, could you do about it?
Okay.
Here's Mandel's answer. I think the worst thing happening to kids today is that the secular left, the fake news media, the Uniparty in Washington.
The what?
The Uniparty. One party control. The Uniparty in Washington. They're trying to take God out of all aspects of society. You know where this is going.
Finally, heard my letters.
Uh-huh. He goes on to say, these leftists, they advance the argument that the separation of church and state exists and that for that reason, you cannot teach kids about religion. My personal feeling is there's no such thing as separation of church and state. The framers of the Constitution envisioned a country where, in the classroom, kids would learn about God.
I don't think they did.
I don't think they did either.
This guy has been reading David Barton's books, I think, and I think he's a little bit confused about what the Founding Fathers thought and said.
Founding Fathers thought a lot of things.
And wrote down for perpetuity so we could all keep reading it and not have little snakes like David Barton. And this guy, what's his name?
Josh Mandel.
Fuck him.
There's no such thing as separation of church and state. That should be a disqualifier. Other Republicans tend to say that sort of thing in code. He's just flat out saying the quiet part out loud.
Yep. Yep.
And again, he's lying about a lot of stuff. But what's scary is, one, he legit could be the GOP nominee, which means in Ohio, he could win. Mm-hmm. And that's scary.
Yep.
I'm just thinking, if a Muslim congresswoman said anything that explosive, it would be nonstop coverage.
That didn't even cross my desk.
Cool. Trumpism and evangelicalism. I believe this guy is Jewish, maybe, but he's also Christian nationalist somehow. I don't know how that works.
Wait, really?
I don't remember.
This boy who just said the thing about lack of separation of church and state, he's Jewish? What does he think that means for him then? Listen, I don't pretend to know a lot about Judaism.
Here's an article from 2017. Josh Mandel's strange Jewish journey to Trump land.
Oh, so this guy just has no principles at all. I think that's what I'm kind of leaning on to. That's not great.
Since you mentioned David Barton, let's talk about David Barton.
Do you really have a story for him?
Boom. Yeah.
Holy shit.
I got all the Jessica hits covered.
Mercury's in retrograde or whatever.
It's not David Barton. It's his son, Tim, who is a clone. of David. So David Barton, Christian pseudo-historian who makes up American history and says they were all Christian and they want a theocracy, but they didn't call it.
Whatever. Don't tell him about the Jefferson Bible. His teeny tiny head will explode.
Yes. He has a son, Tim Barton, who knows as much as his father.
Tim Barton, the director of Edward Scissorhands?
Yeah, very close to that. They were talking about Pete Buttigieg, who recently adopted twins with his partner, taking like 8 or 12 weeks off.
Yeah, paternity leave.
Paternity leave, which, by the way, was a working paternity leave. Yeah, of course it
was. Because he's the fucking Secretary of Transportation. Yep. Also, like, oh boy. You know what I heard get trotted out for the first time in genuinely like 10 years? I heard somebody say, oh, Pete Buttigieg took the like paternity leave. I guess that means he's the wife. And I was like, oh, I forgot that used to be a thing. Do you remember that like 90s homophobia like, that yeah, it was yeah. like, the... oh, I don't hate gay people, but which one of you is the wife? Which one's the husband? And we're like, that's humor, ladies and gentlemen. And it's really fun to see these oldies get trotted out sometimes.
Oh man, I miss Fox News late night comedy shows.
Garfield or whatever. Is that his name?
Yeah, sure.
Exclamation point in the Garfield font.
Yes. So that's, they were complaining about Buttigieg having paternity leave. Mm-hmm. But here's, besides the homophobia, I'm skipping over the low-hanging fruit jokes. But here's what Tim Barton said about paternity leave. Now, paternity leave.
Jesus,
it's one thing to be on a maternity leave, right? When a mom has a baby and her body has to physically recover, and then she's taking care of the baby, and there's nurturing involved in the baby, and like, right?
Maybe at least dad acknowledged that.
Maybe dad needs to be home for a couple days to help take care of mom. Two men, neither of whom physically birthed the child, have been on paid leave.
Sounds like Dave Burton was a real cool dad who was really involved in his sweet good son's life, and he's certainly not trying to follow in his dad's footsteps to get that approval. He never got.
In a straight, you just had a baby, husband and wife, and it's fine for a dad to take a couple days off to help out mom. And then
he's
got
to go back
fine.
To the cigar store to restock his supply. You know, that takes a couple days.
Like, I was working from home because that's what I do. Yeah. But like, I was working from home, didn't have technically a leave.
Yeah.
But I was home. And like, for whatever, it's going on several years now. Yeah.
You're still involved in the raising of these children. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Like, it was a couple of months of, all right, who's sleeping tonight?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I'll stay up with this one. Mm-hmm. Fine. Like, it's a lot of work.
It's not a lot of work if you don't put any work into it. And that's the key that these men have figured out.
I mean, just setting aside the bigotry, the idea that, you know, in normal families, dad takes a couple of days off, and that's all you need. No wonder you don't need paid leave, whatever. By the way, so I had to look this up because I didn't know the answer.
Uh-huh.
Does Tim Barton have any kids of his own? He does. He has two of them.
That's shocking.
What did he do when these things were born?
Are their names like Liberty and Ammo?
I don't know the answer to that. Oh, man.
I usually don't. I try not to laugh at my own very good jokes, and yet here we are. They're just too funny for me.
So just to be clear, the party, the family values people are very upset that a new father took an official paid leave to take care of his adopted kids. It is like a Christian right dream come true that someone adopted kids and said, I need to take off work because I want to be there for my partner. But because he's gay,
it doesn't count. It's not good. No, I honestly, the fact that they still pretend they're the family values bullshit party is so fucking sad. It's so pathetic. And the funny thing about this is it's not even about, usually it's about women. And this is just like, I guess usually it's like women, well, they shouldn't be working anyway, so family leave shouldn't be a thing. Seems to me to be the hypothesis of like that runs the whole through line, right? Well, it doesn't matter. You shouldn't be working anyway,
right,
so who gives a fuck? I'm not going to pay, you know, I'm not going to give you any moment.
That
to,
has been an argument they've made right now with the Biden bills, which is, why do they need paid leave? The mom's going to be at home anyway.
I hate these people. with everything I have in me, and it's quite a lot. I think we've learned over our years together, Hemant. Yes. I have much hate to give, and guess what? It's getting focused up, and Kristen Cinema, guess what? Yeah, we loved your denim vest, but you don't get to do that right now.
Don't drag me into your denim vest.
First of all, I liked that denim vest. I can't wear a denim vest. Yes, I'm jealous of Kristen Cinema for wearing, being able to pull off a denim vest where I never could. However, you have taken medical attention away from mothers. You have taken the sense of well-being away from families.
Free community college, that's gone thanks to her.
Between her and Joe Manchin, I swear to fucking God, it's like they know how to fix this. We know how to make the world a better place. And we're like, fuck it. I hate it.
Here's what annoys me the most right now. It's that I think I've heard someone else say this. 100% of Republicans oppose all of this shit.
Yeah.
99% of Democrats support all of this. It's those two who are pretty much the problem.
It's literally those two and human beings.
And yet, most of the public and a whole bunch of media outlets are like, Democrats.
Dems in disarray!
Yeah, they're blaming Democrats for not getting shit done, which is so not the issue going on here. It's a couple of people who deserve to be called out. Yes, they're Democrats. Please call them out. But to pretend like Republicans have... no one's going after Susan Collins or Murkowski or anybody.
I think that's such a good point because I've seen a lot of shit on Twitter, and understandably so, of like the jerk-off motion, vote blue no matter who. And yes, yes, everybody has every fucking door I knocked, you know, leading up to the election was to make sure I can get mothers... fucking 4 weeks to spend with their newborn babies, because what the fuck else should we be caring about as a society? We should take care of babies. I thought we all agreed on this. But so I get it. I get that it's deeply and fundamentally frustrating that these two Democrats are holding up all this shit. And I do wish them both ill. I hope they have.
But you can't.
I hope their stakes are always overcooked, like not enough that they can send it back, but enough that like they'll never enjoy a good meal again. I want everything to be a little bit too salty for them. I want them to feel slightly hungover forever. However, if we replaced those two, I am not convinced that another Democrat can win in West Virginia.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
And I don't know about Arizona's politics well enough. It's very confusing to me at this point.
Sinema's there till 24. There's a Republican governor. You're not getting rid of her either. And again, right now, if anything else happened, if you didn't have those two in power right now, nothing would be happening for anything.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, you need them there for any chance. And by the way, they have passed some stuff, the COVID bill and things like that. And they might get something done here, even if it's not everything I want. But also, there are options. I know it's a hard race. I don't want to talk about the next year's elections and stuff.
I actually cannot physically talk about
elections.
They
are basically making a case, Cinema Manchin, are making a case for why in states when you can elect an actually progressive Democrat, like, you got to get that shit done. And I've seen candidates, Democrats, who are running, who are like, their entire slogan is, I would be your 51st vote. That's their primary message to Democrats. It's a smart one.
And, you know, it's so far, Kristen Sinema, Joe Manchin, they could be heroes.
They could be. I know.
And they're just choosing
not
to.
If she wants attention, you could have good attention.
She truly
is.
They are both choosing the most cowardly way out. They're fucking senators. You have a 6-year slot of time. You're not a congressperson where you have to worry about re-election every 2 years. Jesus, have some fucking integrity and some backbone and say, listen, West Virginia, I understand that maybe like this isn't the shit you think you want, but like I want to, as soon as those people start getting like, you know, like we saw with Medicare for All, people hate it, or not Medicare for All, that's
the Affordable Care Act.
The Affordable Care Act. Oh, people hate it. And then you get
until they get healthcare, used to it, then they like
and
it.
And then, oh my God, they
not
fucking
like
it.
That's the wrong word.
So they
they're
get
used
to used
it
to,
and they would get mad if you took it away from them.
They get used to being able to go to a doctor when they're sick in the richest country in the fucking world. But like, but that, I mean, they have this opportunity, and I'm not saying that, whatever. They have this opportunity to say, like, listen, I'm going to do big good. And if that means that I don't get to be here for 12 years, I only get to be here for 6 years.
I'm going to predict this right now. Cinema's not running again. She'll either go rich,
because she's going to be busy lobbyists. Jumping up my ass and dying.
That too. She'll take some other position somewhere where she'll make money and never have to. She'll pull like a Jeff Flake. She'll be an ambassador
to somewhere.
So that's her future. I don't think she's running again because she knows she doesn't.
So
care.
All she's doing is making life worse for people.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's
and
the
maybe
worst.
You can convince her on some stuff, but overall, like whatever. It's not like she has friends. She's got to impress or anything. I don't know. Let me jump to this before we forget this. I want to make sure I find this somewhere.
Okay, well, you write things
there
down, so we're not worried about you forgetting things.
New survey from the Pew Research Center was about church-state separation, and here's the question. What do Americans think about church-state separation? Should the government declare the U.S. a Christian nation? What percent of Americans said we should declare this a Christian nation?
What are you saying to me right now?
That's the question.
I don't know, 50%?
15, relatively low.
Wow.
I know. And
I choked on my own. Wow, I was so surprised.
69% said, yep, never declare any religion an official religion of the U.S.
Well, so, that makes me feel, I'm sorry, you conducted this?
Pew Research Center.
Oh, so it's Pew, all right.
It's good. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. But then I thought, you know what? Even people like David Barden, even all the Christian nationalists, mm-hmm. most of them, all the pastors, they would say, I want it to be a Christian nation. I want us to go back to the foundations of our country, which mm-hmm. were all Christian all the time. But I don't want a theocracy. Like, they're the first ones who would be like, I don't want this declared a Christian nation. We should just be one. So I was optimistic for about a second. And then I'm like, well, all right, I don't know what to read into that. Then they said federal government should enforce separation of church and state. Yes or no? 54% of Americans said, yeah, enforce separation of
church
and state.
That's alarmingly low.
Yeah. 19% oppose that. Rest of them don't know anything. Didn't want to answer the question, whatever. So it's a majority of Americans say, yeah, I want to enforce it. Yes, not high enough, but it's something. But then here's where it gets even weirder. Then they asked, like, should public school teachers lead students in Christian prayer? So, an example of whether we have church-state separation, right? Mm-hmm. 46% said no. 30% said, yeah, that's fine. Teachers leading kids in Christian prayers in school. So,
well,
like, even though they're opposed to church-state separation...
Well, that's
like.
Not-
And then, right. How about this? Cities and towns should have religious symbols on public property.
Oh,
or they should
God.
Be allowed to do it.
Oh, they
pretty,
love that shit.
Pretty clear example of how we don't have church-state separation mm-hmm. if they're doing that, like mm-hmm, the giant mm-hmm. cross in Maryland or something. 39% said, yeah, I'm fine with that. And 35% said no. So all these people...
Are you trying to tell me that these people don't understand what the separation of church and state means?
Thank you. Yes, that's the moral of the story. These all these
kooks.
People are like, I think I'm against it. Well, what about this application
Unless
of it?
Unless you agree
with
me.
Yeah. Then they're like, oh, well, I'm fine with, like, teachers leading prayers and putting giant crosses and nativity scenes on public property. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I'm against... I'm all for church-state separation. Like, there are definitely people who said they support separation... And support religious symbols on public property and stuff. What I'm saying is Americans are really dumb. I think that's the moral of that story.
Yeah, I think it's most people, but yeah. Is it my turn for my sports rant?
Sports rant.
So Hammond's going to feel right at home. Okay, so there has been a topic that's been floating around in my periphery that I chose to ignore for a long time, and finally came to head yesterday, and I just wanted to talk about some thoughts that I have about it. Hemet and I are both from Chicago. Hemet and I are both equally avid sports fans, right, Hemet?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
all the sports balls.
Oh my God, love the sports balls. moved back to Chicago, started dating my now husband at a time when the Blackhawks were winning Stanley Cups every other year, which is a very fun thing to be around. And it brought this city together in this really cool way. Coach Joel Quinville, he lived in Hinsdale. He was like the cool guy. He had a mustache. It's very iconic. It was a young team, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, like all these boys, Duncan Keith, you know, the older guys, but it was a fun team to watch. It was a fun moment to be a part of in Chicago history. And then I learned recently, as did most of us learn, if you're paying attention to this, there was a young player who for a long time we have known him only as John Doe, or I think John Doe 1. His name is Kyle Beach. He was a Blackhawks center in 2010, which was leading up to their first Stanley Cup victory. Kyle Beach was sexually assaulted by video coach Brad Aldrich. I don't know what video coach means. I'm sure it's when they watch their video playback and they have to learn from their mistakes learn what the other people are doing. I think it sounds like a stupid job title. Anyway, this dude sexually assaulted this young man, and Kyle Beach was not a Kane. He was not one of our, it wasn't Keith. He wasn't Sharp. He wasn't one of our big name players. Aldrich, the coach, said it was consensual. Beach said no, hella wasn't. Apparently, Aldrich threatened Beach, saying, you know, nobody will believe you. He said Aldrich told Beach he would never play in the NHL or walk again if he didn't, quote, act like he enjoyed the sexual encounter. A couple days later, so this is May 2010, a couple days later, Beach talks to a different coach. Beach is the victim, talks to a different coach. They run it up the flagpole and was ignored. All the head coaches, the GMs, it was brought to them. They had a meeting about it. We know this now. And everybody, including Coach Q, Joel Quinville, our like substitute dad for those years, saw it, knew about it, and thought, well, my boys are doing good. I don't want to interrupt their Stanley Cup win. And you know what? They won that year. So, like, I guess. So Aldrich gets, I don't know if you've heard this story before, he gets moved. First he assaults an intern, a 22-year-old team intern that was also made aware of by the human resource team. If you're worried, did Aldrich get his name engraved on the Stanley Cup after sexually assaulting one of the players? Yeah, it super was.
I saw a picture that on the Stanley Cup, his name was engraved on the Stanley Cup.
If you don't know hockey, the Stanley Cup is a series of rings that continually gets passed up. And eventually they go, they're stored at the Toronto National Hockey Hall of Fame, which I've been to. And it has not just every player, but coaches for sure. So his name was engraved on that. He was eventually released from the Blackhawks, ended up taking a job at the University of Miami, Miami University of Ohio. He was the director of hockey operations in 2012, and he assaulted two kids there. So that brings us to...
So I have not followed this story closely, but if I have this right, he's assaulting players on the Blackhawks, mm-hmm. assaulting interns on the Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows he's doing it because mm-hmm. it's been reported.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do anything about mm-hmm. it because they're winning.
So what does he do?
So then he goes to a college uh-huh. and continues everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they could have stopped him earlier, but they didn't.
Hey, I wish I was at the end of the story because guess what?
Jesus
he couldn't
Christ.
Really work in college anymore because of all the sexual assaulting.
Yeah.
So he moved down to the high school level. Guess what he did there?
Let me guess.
Yeah.
Everything the same.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
All the same. September 2013,
Jesus.
The police start to get involved.
Oh, good.
The Blackhawks stonewall them.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, however, I want to be clear about this. The cops were going after sexual assault charges on this high school player. We're going after Aldrich. Went to the Black House and said, what the fuck do you know about this guy? And they're like, what? He's a great guy.
Uh-huh.
Or said nothing.
Yeah.
So that brings us to 2014. He was eventually sentenced to jail. No thanks to the Blackhawks. And that brings us to this year.
Yeah, so what happened now that this guy's in the news and the Blackhawks are in a shitstorm?
So in May, somebody at the time, an unknown player, known as John Doe 1, filed a lawsuit against the Hawks, not for the sexual assault, but for their inability to take any action about it. And then suddenly, it's so weird, because May he files this lawsuit, and then suddenly in June, the Blackhawks were like, we're going to do an independent internal investigation. The rest of it is a lot of people are getting let go. Bowman and McIsaac, who are two member higher-ups, I don't care. They stepped down. These are
managers or like that level of staffer ownership.
This is like the general manager, things like that. Blackhawks CEO Danny Wirtz, who also owns Wirtz Beverages, I don't know, is like...
His dad owned the Blackhawks forever.
His dad was almost sunk the Blackhawks because he believed that if you put hockey on TV, nobody would come see games.
Right.
So the fucking second that old man dropped dead, his son was like, guess what's back, nerds? Like, we're going to be watching. And it was HGTV for the first time, which explains why I left Chicago in 2004, came back in 2009, and all of a sudden everybody was into Hawks again.
I think the Blackhawks were, at some point when Bill Wirtz was the owner, were like the worst franchise in America.
Terrible franchise. And an original 18, like a historic, it was...
It could very easily not have been the worst franchise because they had everything going for them.
Because it's Chicago. We are, if nothing else, a sports city.
Wait, so this guy's son takes over.
Our shit is about sports and pizza. What?
So guy's son takes over. They win Stanley Cups. He's got to be aware of all the stuff that's going on. Did he step down?
The report is both disturbing and difficult to read. It speaks for itself. Blackhawks owner Rocky Wirtz, so that would be his...
I don't know the family...
No, Rocky Wirtz is the dad. He must have died right around 2010. Like he, our leadership team reviewed the report. We have important and difficult conversations about how our organization will move forward. So the NHL fines the Blackhawks $2 million, which is jerk-off motion money. Bowman apparently was supposed to be the general manager for the 2022 Winter Olympics. He stepped down from that. And then yesterday, Beach came forward as John Doe. He's now 31. He said it was a day of many emotions. I cried, I smiled, I laughed, I cried some more. My girlfriend and I, we really didn't know how to feel.
Because
he was outed, he chose to out himself as John Doe 1.
Okay.
I think
the anonymity is gone in that.
Well, even before he came forward officially, from what I read, reports were really fucking specific to the point of like giving his, they said he was a center. They gave his height and weight.
Yeah.
And like, listen,
easy to find.
There's a finite number of Blackhawks around.
Right.
So that happened. Yesterday is when I found out that Coach Q, who I cannot stress enough, was like,
God, I know who Coach Q is, and I don't follow hockey at all.
If anybody grew up in a sports town, you're Ditkas, you know the coaches
of these teams.
Phil Jackson, like these are classic, like Joel Madden's going to be that forever unless he fucks up again. Mm-hmm. Joel Quenneville was this guy. So this, I found out this yesterday, and then around the same time as when Beach outed himself, which I think is incredibly brave, and boy, I don't know if I could have done the same thing in his position, but I have
not. Man, to sit with that for as long as he did, too.
It's 10 years ago, listen, I know what it is to live with sexual assault. I don't know what it is to live with a sexual assault followed by a franchise cover-up. So I can't imagine. He's been doing great mentally. when somebody says, hey, this team winning a game is more important than you being sexually assaulted, that can't feel super great when you've spent your entire life trying to be a hockey player. Then yesterday, which is, I think, for some reason why I wanted to bring it up. This has nothing to do with the religion, obviously. It's patriarchal more than anything else. But Taves and Kane, and Jonathan Taves was 19 in 2010, I think. He was the captain. Everybody, this young man, he gets it. He's got it. He's a leader. He's a natural born leader. He was the fucking captain of a original hockey team. Like this.
Yeah.
He was somebody who was to be respected. Kane's always been an idiot. He punched a cabbie, if I remember right. So he's always been a dick, but he is a very good hockey player. So people give him a lot of space because people are nightmares. Anyway, these two people who have been on the Blackhawks, who are no longer 19-year-old kids, who are adults, who have seen how shit rolls, are aware of what this man has gone on to do after leaving the Hawks. Both of these spineless, yellow-livered motherfuckers give this milquetoast. He did so much for the franchise, He did so much for me personally. I'm sorry to hear about whatever happened, but I don't feel comfortable saying anything. And, man, I think that made me done with sports. I think I have officially decided sports are nothing. They're toxic. They are systems that just set up places for men to get drunk and fight and assault people and then it all get covered up. What are we doing? Why do I care if fucking Anthony Rizzo, another one of my like sports heroes, was an anti-vaxxer in the end? Jason Hayward, he gave this inspiring speech. Have you heard the story, Hemet? The inspiring speech he gave in the 10th inning during the rain of the 2016 World Series. He gave this speech. Let's go out there and do it, boys. And they fucking did it. And then 5 years later, he's like, I don't think I believe in COVID shots because I'm a center fielder. So I guess what I'm saying is, what are we doing as a society?
See, this is why you should just follow politics like me.
You follow college basketball. That's worse. Those kids are straight up getting taken advantage of. So you sleep with that, Hammond. Anyway, I made a Goodwill donation. I genuinely gave away all of my Cubs gear. I have a hat, my Cubs hat, that I've worn for 14 years. I'm fucking done. I am no longer going to pretend that like me being a Cubs fan is a personality type and that strangers will like me more if I know that Anthony Rizzo is an anti-vaxxer and I can tell him about that interview. Like these, I've invested my life in these dumb sports. And for what? To watch a 19-year-old kid become a millionaire and then 10 years later be like, oh, that guy who sexually assaulted somebody? I don't know. I don't know what problem you have with him. He was a real good hockey coach. We watched video. Great. He did slow down in the best way. I'm done. I am done pretending that because you're good at throwing a ball, we're going to listen to your political opinions. I'm fucking done with it. I am done with it all. So that is my rant about sports. I know I'm only sound angry. I'm deeply sad. This is a thing I've done with my dad for my entire life. We used to go to bars in Chicago. I've stopped following football years and years ago for moral reasons. I think I'm just done with sports.
There was an article that came out today. I think it was in a place called Dame Magazine, but it was about what happens, not cancel culture, but like if you genuinely loved something, someone, and then they have this fall from grace.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, what do you do when I can't watch Chappelle anymore? Or I can't listen to like a Louis C.K. thing and I used to really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I can't watch the Blackhawks play. Yeah, that's happening in a lot of ways right now where you have to reassess, not heroes, but people like I just genuinely liked and it was a fun part of my life. And now I can't enjoy it the same way. And like,
it's fun to watch something non-critically, and that's not
that shit anymore. Yeah, there's so much shit everywhere, and this was a place that I just looked forward to.
And
it's sad when that disappears.
Listen, I don't need Taves to be some sort of, like, radical feminist humanitarian for me to think he's an okay dude. Like, literally, the bar is, hey, if somebody you know raped somebody else, probably say that person's a bad guy. Right? Like, I don't know, man. Like,
do you want a happy story to end on?
Oh, I thought we were done. I'm wound down. I don't think I have any emotions left in me.
Just one story. I crossed out the rest of them. But this one was good. There were a couple of hikers in Vancouver maybe earlier this month. It's a place called Golden Ears Provincial Park in Vancouver. Mm. A couple of hikers.
Golden Ears? Yeah. I've never heard that.
But they were hiking, and they must have gotten to a part of the trail that's way too close to the river and, like, hard currents.
Okay.
And, like, it's dangerous. Don't go down there. I'm sure they had signs saying don't go here. Uh-huh. They went there, and now they're stuck. And now they can't get up again because they can't get a foothold into wherever they need, and it's not looking good.
Okay.
All of a sudden, these five Sikh guys with turbans on their heads walk by, and they see what's happening, and they don't know if anyone's called the cops. They know their phone reception's not very good, so they can't do it. And here's the thing. If you're Sikh, you're not supposed to take your turban off in public. That's one of the rules of the faith. You do it in, it's like a Islamic woman with a burqa or something. You can do it indoors.
Is it a modesty thing? Is that,
I don't think modesty, don't ask me specifics, but they're not supposed to do it
in
public.
But you're brown, you're supposed to know all the brown things.
I know, but it's a different brown. I know. So, what did they do when they saw these two guys? They took off their turbans, they unraveled them, they made a rope ladder, and I guess one of the guys who was not involved in the direct helping with the rope ladder took video of this, but they did not post it anywhere.
I was going to say.
They just took it because, like, hey, my buddies are here, and we're glad these guys are okay, and they did get them to a point of safety, and it turned out the police or whatever version of it in the park had been called or knew about this somehow. They were making their way there, but by the time they arrived, everything was okay. The guys were already safe. And this week, the reason I know about this is this week, whatever local Royal Canadian Mountie police people.
RCMP.
Yeah, they honored the five guys and just honored their bravery just gave them a public thank you for what they did. One of the superintendent types said, to the two young men were in danger of drowning. Your quick thinking and your heroic actions undoubtedly saved the lives of those men. One of the guys, one of the Sikh guys said, you know, in these matters, we don't really care if it's religious or not. It's a person's life. Mm-hmm. We can save it. We can tie the turban again as many times as we want. But that life, we can't bring it back. And just, they're willing to put decency over
that's really
dogma.
Nice.
Which is, yeah, that's what you should do. And yeah. I was trying to think, is there any parallel to what, I don't know, a conservative Christian that we're talking about all these shows? Like, what would they do? That's their version of, this goes against my beliefs.
Yeah.
But it would help you. And so I want to help you instead. And I feel like I haven't
probably
heard.
Probably abortion care would be the best thing I could think of like, so, oh, you were raped and impregnated by a person.
And
I'm going to need help. Yeah, and you need help.
And those stories are few and far between.
Well,
I'm thinking like
if they exist at all.
Yeah. And so it's, yeah, these guys did something amazing. I'm glad they got some credit for it. By the way, I should say, they took video of it. They weren't going to release it. It's only when the cops said, basically, we want to see the video of this and find out what happened.
Did they, like, is there something about, like, they wanted to block their head or their hair
or whatever.
No, they
were just taking videos of the guys grabbing the rope from underneath and pulling
up. Oh, I see. I thought it was like they took a video of the whole thing, but they didn't want to share video with their
turbans. No, they were just like, we're not
going to
post this, like, look at how awesome we are.
I mean, I would, but I guess that makes Sikhs better than me.
Yes.
But, you know, it's funny. We frequently get the...
we have so many conservative Christians who are like, what? You're going to get in the way of something I want? no, all the world can die in a pandemic.
What if I murder you instead?
Yeah, I'm not going to wear a mask. And, like, they make up their own rules.
Oh, yeah.
They're not even saying this is a dogmatic thing.
God
just like,
always said he
God
needed masks.
Yeah,
that's why there's no Christian doctors.
God doesn't want any Christians to wear masks. He created our face.
Ugh, what a fucking idiot that hypothetical person is. Oh, boy.
I'm
yeah, I think we often get a criticism that, like, oh, you only bag on Christians or whatever, which is true. But also, it's because
we live here.
But also, Sikhs don't pull this kind of bullshit.
Right.
I always want to tell a nice story about religious people being good about in within the confines of their religion, unless there's an ulterior motive, which there almost always seems to be. But like, that's a great story.
Right,
I love
right.
that story.
There, I ended your day on a good note.
Great, I have two quick updates vis-a-vis that Planned Parenthood story that I told a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
First of all, I got so wrapped up in telling that story that I forgot the coda at the end of it, which was when I was turning to leave. Or maybe I did tell this already. Never mind. Basically, I told the woman, they should... Did I say this? That I focused... I was like, if you want to stop abortions, you should focus on sex education and contraception.
I don't remember if you said that or
okay,
not.
Okay, okay. I thought I left this out because I was, I felt like I really nailed the ending and then I forgot there was more to the story. So I pulled around. I was getting ready to leave. These women were walking back and forth. Essentially, I stopped to yell at some women who were protesting outside of Planned Parenthood. And then I played a lot of loud music. It was great. I pulled up and I was like, hey, if you guys are worried about abortions, you should worry about sex education and access to contraception. And they're like, everything is preventable via abstinence. And Hemet, I got to look a woman dead in her eyes and say, tell it to my rapist. And I felt, and then she's like, I'm so sorry that happened to you. And I was like, no, you're not. And I sped away. It was really delightful. But, and caveat number two on that is I once again had to go to that Mariano's today because I'm making a charcuterie plate.
It's the whitest sentence.
Yeah, I know. And you would be able to take the riches of my charcuterie plate if you're coming to my Halloween party on Saturday. But I went back. And today, what's the weather like today, Hemet? Raining all fucking
shitty,
day. 50 degrees, just drizzly and miserable. And these motherfuckers are still out there. As I was leaving the Marianas, I took a video to show the kind of layout of what was going on. And then those motherfuckers are still there under a big ass golf umbrella. Anyway, those people are monsters. And I did roll my window down because there was water on my window. So I rolled the window down and flicked them off and made the biggest smile I could make.
You?
I hope so. I think in their heart they could feel part of my spirit. I was trying to plan on can I do a big drive-by thing? But I just went for the classic flip them a bird and drive away with my trunk full of charcuterie.
Where do we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Jess Blumke. If you are looking for a present of some kind, maybe for the upcoming holiday season, my Etsy shop is Bitches Get Stitch Done. I've actually gotten a few really cool orders from listeners lately. Usually, just for your information, usually I don't take orders past the end of November for Christmas. And if I fill up, I have to stop because these take me between 4 and 20 hours to make each. So if you're interested in getting something for Christmas, I would say do it sooner rather than later because I'm not going to stress myself out this holiday season. I'm closing those doors as soon as I feel overwhelmed. You can always email us at friendlyatheistpodcast@gmail.com. Patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. Hemant, where can we find you?
Friendlyatheist.com. Go to Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, congratulations. Facebook named itself after you.
I know.
If anybody hasn't heard yet.
It's about time I took over that place.
The umbrella company that owns Facebook and Instagram and whatever, they renamed themselves Meta. And I was in Target when I got that push alert and yell laughed and immediately text him in all caps you dumb motherfucker. So if you're wondering what it's like to be friends with me, it's a lot of all caps texts making fun of me.
I believe what I wrote back was "zuck you,"
which was very good. It was a good pun. I cannot imagine I'm the first person you've had to tell that to today.
Only the ninth.
All right, so we'll see you next week.
Bye.